Hey everybody, I'm Aaron.
I'm Dee, and combined, we're the Wonder Twins. For deliciously geeky fun
and mega nerdy hygiene,
follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
Weekly episodes can be found on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Google Play. We're the best little podcast in Texas, Joe.
We're the Wonder Twin Powers Activate Show.
Gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I am your host, Andrew Farmer, with me, the other host of the show, the Jedi Cole Houston. Cole, are you there?
Yes, indeed. I am here, and I am all over this one because, you know, this is issue 272, Reynolds Wrap, and I would so wrap myself in Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, I think we all would, including our guests tonight, especially one that we're bringing back after literally throwing him to the wolves.
Or the octopi.
Yeah, in the first instance of complete and total guerrilla podcasting. Stephen Fett joins us again. Stephen, how are you? Have you recovered?
Yeah. I just finished my Whopper.
You just finished your Whopper. That's good. I'm glad.
I'm glad you're eating again, because
we were worried
when we last heard from you, you were curled up in a ball and weeping, and we literally threw 8 curveballs at you with Dr. Octopus.
Yeah, we did.
Yes, y'all did.
You hung in there, though, and you made me throw up in my mouth a little bit, so kudos to you, because that's not an easy thing to do.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, and back for a second time, because tonight we are talking about Marvel movies. And we need to rectify a wrong. Aaron Prado. Did I get that right this time?
This one's good.
All right. We mispronounced his name because, number one, he has a dulcet voice, much like Don Pardo. Number two, my phone is really... My phone is... can't get his name right, so it auto-corrected and just stopped.
You know what? You're not the first one. My whole life, I've had people mispronunciate my last name. So trust me, you're a good company, my good friend. We are good to go.
Whatever you want to call him, he's a brilliant podcaster and co-host of the Wonder Twins Powers Activate Show, which is the entire name.
And for those unfamiliar with Stephen Fett, I also need to go ahead and point out he is the official eternal intern for the Rancor Pit Live.
Okay.
You will never be elevated beyond intern. I'm just going to let that out right now.
You're stuck, buddy.
Always a Padawan, never a Jedi.
That's right.
Right.
So, it's my favorite Ace of Base song. I was really unfortunately I have Aaron on camera, so I'm going to try to time my jokes to make him actually shoot beer out his nose. That's my goal tonight.
It's a goal.
Good goal. So tonight we do a show that I think we swore we would never do. I think that we kind of agreed, because I think Cole and I are in agreement that this is not our favorite character ever of all time, ever, any at all.
Certainly not the least favorite. But by no means anywhere remotely, it isn't even invited any sort of favorite party.
And even after the first movie, I don't think we went out of our way to record about it, did we?
We did not. And I think this is partly another oversight that we just, and we both loved the first Deadpool film. But for whatever reason, maybe we're in the middle of a story arc, or maybe I just needed something to fill in that plotting for this show that now is officially into June 2020.
Right.
And I keep coming up with new ones. The other day, I'm like, damn it, I had to call Andy and tell him another idea I just had.
But anyway, tonight, we're covering the two Deadpool movies. Finally. We're going to... I really think that we were scared of getting hurt, and that's why we didn't do the first one. And now we're like, okay.
It hardly matters now. Plus, I think I was just holding out for a better title.
That's
now
true.
That we have two films that act as the ideal fan apology for, what was it, X-Men Origins Wolverine?
Yeah.
I think we all feel like we've been vindicated.
I think so.
And now it's time to let the healing begin.
Aaron, what was that?
I said, especially after the second Deadpool movie where... Yeah, I don't want to jump the gun here, and I won't, but, like, yeah, it's like some things were corrected, and you were like, thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah, it was like, oh, right? Where art thou? All my sins and transgressions have been forgiven.
I can give you a big
that.
If you haven't seen the movies, if you're the one person that hasn't seen the movies, go see them before you listen to this, because it's just going to be spoiler rich. We don't care. It's on you if you haven't seen them and you haven't stopped this. So you've been
warned. At this point, you needed to have seen them because you've gone out and seen this repeatedly and really wrecked the numbers for Solo, which pisses me off. But there it is.
Man, God dang it. It makes me so mad. It makes me so mad.
It was a better movie.
It was a fun movie. And if God... Why is it not doing better in the theater? Is it really because of the people who are butthurt about The Last Jedi?
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Yes.
There are people who are still butthurt from The Force Awakens who never went to go see The Last Jedi.
Well, speaking of espousing
hashtag childhood ruined, etc.
Yeah. Come on.
Well, speaking of hashtag childhood ruined and people being butthurt, and it was mentioned a little bit earlier, before the first Deadpool movie was released, we got a Deadpool, but it wasn't Deadpool. I don't know what they thought they were doing. I have no idea what they thought they were doing.
It was so bad.
At least it was the same character.
Yeah, actor too, right?
That's the amazing thing. And you can tell up to, like, in the first act, Ryan Reynolds is on cloud nine. Mm-hmm. And by the third act, not even 6 hours in the makeup chair can hide his shame.
Well, and there's a reason for that, right? Ryan Reynolds, for whatever reason, and this is well documented, lobbied very, very hard for that character. And lobbied very hard to have that character entered into the universe of the X-Men and be that character. And then they took that after the first half and just completely bastardized it. I wouldn't be happy either.
How long did he say when he stole his Deadpool suit from the first one? How long did he say he had been waiting and going through production and all that before they actually put the money down and made this first Deadpool movie? Was it like – it was like 9 years or something like that?
Yeah, it was a very, very long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're looking at what was – X-Men Origins Wolverine was what? Crap, I lost it.
I don't remember when it was, but it was a while ago.
We've all tried to forget it.
Yeah. Yes, we have.
The lucky ones have a great sort of, you know, alien abduction gap in their memories, but some of us still have nightmares when we wake up screaming, thinking of that final scene with a whole prison full of mutants doing nothing. 2009 your X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Okay.
So 2009.
I never saw that in the theater because of, like, just hearing things about it. But I did watch. Remember when they leaked that, like, unrefined version of the movie with the bad CGI?
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that, and that was actually great to watch. Like, just for a humor sort of sake, me and my buddy, we watched that together, and it was actually really good when you watched it with all the flaws in it.
So you had a 7-year gap.
Yep.
So it's not quite, Impossible's Impossible's 2 level gap.
Right.
Or Incredibles, rather. I'm sorry. Impossibles was a Hanna-Barbera cartoon.
Kind of close.
Yeah. But yeah, it is close. And to what I think is amazing about the story of, you know, getting Deadpool on screen only to be ruined, and then having that many years later, you get a Deadpool that is realized in the form that the character became. Because he's a great example of one of those characters like Ambush Bug or Lobo, who started out as an entirely different kind of character, and for whatever reason, somebody said, hey, why don't we do this instead?
Well, and Aaron, amazingly enough, whips out a copy of X-Force 98 on me over here.
this is number one issue right here.
Oh, that's number one. I'm sorry. New Mutants 98 is when. Yes. Okay. Fine. Yes. You have X-Force number one. He's smelling it. But what I really liked. So I have a storied history with this character. When he was introduced, I actually really, really liked the character, because the character, when he was introduced and through the first kind of 10 to 12 issues of his solo series, the Joe Kelly series that they did, that was the solo series, was not the every other panel break the fourth wall Deadpool that we have now in comic books, which I honestly, with the exception of Deadpool Spider-Man, because I really like the dynamic, I won't read them. But there was a lot less fourth wall breaking and a lot more kind of, he's always been the guy with the mouth. He's always been the smart ass. He's always been goofy a little bit, but he's always been a badass. And I think that they veered away from that in the comics after that. So I thought it was really interesting for me that they kind of mirrored that in the movies, where the first movie, I think maybe they broke the fourth wall, except for the narration, right? I mean, the narration obviously was directed at us. But I think they broke the fourth wall maybe once, where he looked, you know, down the barrel of the camera and said something to us as the audience. Most of it was pretty encapsulated within the four walls. And then the second movie, as you move into a more, you know, we've got the origin now, we know what he is, we know that he's a little bit crazy, we kind of go to the more breaking the fourth wall, more making the jokes outside of universe, which I was really, really concerned with, because I didn't want them to go overboard, and I started to feel like they were, but I think they reined it in.
It easily could have become very bad. And one of the things that occurred to me in preparing for this this particular issue was that what really strikes me with Deadpool and Deadpool 2 is these are prime examples of, if you juxtapose that against X-Men Origins Wolverine, you see the stark difference between a film that feels like, or, you know, a pair of films that feel like the studios took their hands off. They just said, I think you're going to make money, let's not interfere. And I really feel like X-Men Origins Wolverine suffered heavily from studio meddling.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with you on that.
What underscores it is the merc with a mouth having no mouth.
Yes. It felt like too many people's hands were in the pot with that one.
Yeah.
Steven,
and
what's
that
your,
happens
oh,
far go, too often.
I'm sorry. Steven, what's your relationship with Deadpool look like?
Well, I mean, I really didn't know anything about, Deadpool, except for, the X-Men, that Wolverine movie. And when I saw him now, I was just like, that doesn't look right. And I don't even know nothing about the character, and I still was like, that doesn't look right. And then I was like, but, it's Ryan Reynolds, so I was like, oh, okay. And then when I heard about, the actual Deadpool movie and everything, and I saw the costume, I was just like, I had never read a comic book with him, but see, this seems right. And it was. The first one and the second movie were just great to me.
Can I ask if it was right because it was Deadpool, or if it was right because of Ryan Reynolds?
I think we all know that answer.
I think we know the answer. I don't even need to talk about that anymore. That's pretty clear. So as a non-comic guy, right? I think it's safe to say, Steven, that you're a non-comic guy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because even, you know, all three of us kind of come to it from a comic book background. As a non-comic guy going into this movie, into these two movies, you know, what was your takeaway from it? Because we came in with preconceived notions of what this character was supposed to be and should be and is. So what was your takeaway from it?
Well, Ryan Reynolds at first, I mean, first of all, did great for advertising the movie. Then the first one was it's a romantic movie, you know, bring your girlfriend, you know, especially right around Valentine's Day, all of that. And, you know, and then you see the whole love story in the beginning, well, right in the beginning, you can just get thrown right into action. And I like that he was talking to you in the movie, like y'all brought up. And I just, that, like that, yeah, the fourth wall, just tearing it down. And just, you know, it was a superhero movie I had never experienced before, and I loved it. It just took me out of what I assumed that it was going to be, like another Superman movie or another Spider-Man movie, you know, just, you know, action, boom, that's it. But no, it was comedy, it was romantic, I mean, everything. It had a little bit of everything.
All right. What about you, Aaron? Like, coming in, like, because, you know, obviously Cole and I were steeped deep into this, you know, tradition. We went in with negative preconceived notions about this character, but where were you, you know, where were you at going in, and how did you feel coming out?
Okay, basically, I know of Deadpool. It's not like I read Deadpool series back in the day. He's not on my radar as far as that's concerned. I liked his look, so I've always known about him, and like you know, Chimichangas and all that stuff, you know, all his little quotes and whatnot. So it's like I'm familiar with his character, and I'm familiar with his background. And when I heard that Ryan Reynolds was going to pick it up, and here's the thing is, I also watched that low budget trailer that he made.
Brilliant.
Because there was a couple of them that came out around the same time. Like, the Punisher had, what was it, Wash Day or what was it?
Laundry Day or something like that, yeah.
Was amazing, and I really wish they would have made a Punisher movie based off of that, but they had Ron Perlman was in it as the dude that was going to do his weapons. Anyways, so they put out that one around the same time, too. And, you know, it was a low-budget little, like, hey, let's shop it around. Let's see if we get some studios interested in it. And I saw that, and I was like, oh my God, Ryan Reynolds is absolutely perfect for this freaking role. Like, the stars aligned, and his attitude, his quirkiness, the way he just does things. I don't know. It felt like it was a true representation of Deadpool. So when the movie finally got into production and was being made, I was like, I'm down for this. I'm looking forward to it. So I went into it, and I wasn't disappointed. It was absolutely everything that I thought it was going to be. It had Gina Carano, which I'm a martial artist, and I love that woman. She fought Cyborg back in the day. She lost, but she was one of the few people that, like, actually, you know, gave her a challenge in this world. And she's beautiful, and her father was a Dallas Cowboy quarterback for – I think he was a backup quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. Can't beat it right there. You had freaking Colossus. For the first time ever, ever do we finally get a Colossus. I mean, when I was a little kid, I loved Colossus. I just thought he was an amazing character, and he was made out of steel, and he just looked really cool, and he had like a Russian accent, and he's always going after his sister and stuff to help her out or whatever the stories was. And I always loved him for that. And they brought him in, and they – I mean, he was all CGI, of course. But still, they made him huge and big, not like the other previous X-Men movies that just used, you know, a regular actor and barely even got to see Colossus in those X-Men movies, which was – I was always disappointed. So that was nice. I don't know, man. I thought the humor was good. They brought in T.J. Miller as sort of the psychic role, comedic value, which I really like T.J. Miller in a lot of things, like Mama's Boy, and or no, I'm sorry, Grandma's Boy, and some other things that he's been in. I've paid attention to his stand-up routines from previous experiences. I was happy when I left. I mean, it's not like he said about how like you're not really like y'all didn't really go after Deadpool because of how you know the fourth wall and all that stuff. Like I could see like you can only watch this movie a few times before the jokes sort of lose its you know pizzazz to it. For lack of a better word, but I still liked it. I still thought it was a good time, and it was definitely worth the $12 or $13 ticket price that spent on it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that across the board. When I was, you know, I think you hit on something really important, Aaron, and that is it was in the X-Men franchise, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't have a lot of. Even for the material that they had, which was fairly dark, right? I mean, it was fairly dark material. The guy has, you know, just full-blown, full-body cancer.
Yes.
And, you know, the love story falling apart and, you know, whatever at the end and all everything, the Ajax and the whole nine yards. It was a – Cole, would you agree with me? It's a happy movie?
In an odd sort of way, it's like the – As black comedy goes, it's sort of in the gray area. It becomes sort of like a charcoal gray versus a black comedy.
Yeah. But it was because lighter.
It somehow takes what could be a really tragic tale and makes it lighthearted and fun. And you know, you shouldn't be having this much fun with, you know, guy dying of cancer. But... It somehow transcends its core elements in a way.
I'd say that's true. We were also, Cole, introduced to a certain on-screen super heroine by the name of Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
I have a question about her. Okay. Was she invented for this movie, or was there actually in a character by that name?
I heard that there was.
See, I've never heard of her before, so... To me, it was a new sort of development, and I was like, okay.
I heard that they found someone that's like, in the F list of, you know, the X-Men world.
Yes.
Like, very bottom of the barrel.
Yeah. Well, at some point, there were so many hundreds of X-Men.
Right.
That, you know, you could easily have found somebody that was largely forgotten, but... I was going to try to see if I could dig up something on Negasonic Teenage Warhead. Apparently having some presence in the Marvel in the comic universe, but I'm not sure, you know, which came first.
I thought she was a cool character.
She premiered in New X-Men 115 in 2001.
Oh, so she's around for a minute.
Yeah, Cole, who wrote it? Do you have that?
Let me see. Brian Reynolds? No,
yeah, right.
That's hilarious.
Well, actually, I should be able to tell from the issue itself. Let's try using that as a... Okay, this is about the point I was completely falling out of a lot of almost all comics.
I didn't think.
Of course it was.
Who was it?
Of course. I damn you. Grant Morrison.
Grant motherfucking Morrison!
Please explain to me, because I don't have any foreknowledge of Grant Morrison.
So, do you know how... are you familiar with the names Aristotle, Plato? The
Plenty
books,
the Elder.
The books of the Bible. Your various Pauls. Sure. Your various Pauls. I made myself laugh. No, he's in my top three or four comic book writers of all time.
Okay.
Also wrote things such as, you might recognize him from, The Invisibles, the relaunch of Doom Patrol, Animal Man. He's kind of the Alan Moore heir apparent of sorts, where, you know, if you look at Mark Millar as sort of the Grant or the Frank Miller heir apparent, like if that's a generational thing, then he's sort of the looked at as sort of the been groomed to be the protege for Alan Moore and did some amazing Batman work. Has done. It's just he's just an amazing nerd.
He's like a top notch guy. Okay.
Yeah. And every time his name comes up, and I sat there and kept my damn mouth shut while you guys argued where Negasonic Teenage Warhead comes from, because I knew that somebody was going to fight it, and I was going to make Cole read his name.
Nice.
He gets a lot of coverage on this show.
He gets, between Alan Moore and him,
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, if I'm not mentioning Watchmen every 15th episode.
God, it's been a while. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been. I have not linked anything to Watchmen in quite a while.
Can you link Deadpool to Watchmen?
No.
You can't? Yeah. Through the comedian? You can't? I mean...
7 degrees is Kevin Bacon.
So, Cole, what were you feeling?
I mean, if you're talking strictly within comics, I refuse to connect anything Rob Liefeld to anything Alan Moore. So the answer remains a fervent no.
Oh, Cole. All right, so Cole, what are your thoughts on Negasonic Teenage Warhead now that we've got here?
You know, the thing about it is, I think somewhere in my subconscious I was wondering if there was a comic book precedent for the character, but never up until this moment thought about it enough to do any looking. But I think, you know, it kind of, I think, partly struck me as the sort of character they would have just made up for the movie. Yeah. I love the fact that there is a pre-existing that she has a pre-existing condition, as it were, because that's some very clever digging about in the Marvel Universe. And that's one of those things I love about the modern superhero movies, where the studio respects the audience enough to realize that, yes, 100% of those butts in the seats aren't going to be attached to brains that have been looking at comics all their life.
Yeah.
But those that aren't familiar will enjoy a good movie. Those that are familiar will enjoy the hell out of seeing little nods to what they know, and those who are only passingly familiar get to have a lot of fun discovering that Negasonic Teenage Warhead existed before Deadpool movies.
Right on. I agree.
And I love the fact that they respected that element of their audience enough that it didn't matter to me that Ellie Finminster of Geonosha was Negasonic Teen Warhead in the comics. I'm unbothered by the fact that cinematically everything's changed. I don't care either way. It's really fun when I discover there were even more. We have an upcoming episode about, Riverdale? Because I want to talk about the fact that I have only the most passing familiarity with Archie comics, and I'm blown away by the stuff that they do in that show that is a wonderful nod to what I know was there. And I'm perfectly comfortable with the fact that I'm missing a lot of inside jokes and nuances and subtleties. And I love the fact that the same is true for Deadpool.
Right. I agree with that. All right, so does anybody have any final thoughts on the first Deadpool movie? I know we sort of glossed over it, but I know that the Deadpool 2 is just chock-a-block with all kinds of stuff to talk about, so I wanted to give it plenty of time.
I like that on the first one, they brought up about the whole, this is part one and both number one and number two, that, you know, oh, what, Professor X, which one is it that's in this world that they're in? And then, sure enough, you get to finally figure out that, you know, the younger Professor X that's on the second one for a little quick cameo with the rest of the little X-Men group. I really did like that. I like that, you know, in the first one, they're like, I was like, is it early in the, or is it, you know, in today's world, or is it back in the 90s? But it just seems, I don't know. I like that they brought that up, and then they brought it up again for a cameo in the second one.
That was pretty brilliant. And to also, you know, underscore that Deadpool is very much an X-Men family character. He's part of that franchise. by bringing in, you know, not only Colossus, but Xavier School.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And there, he's walking right on the campus, which is piss poor security, I want to point out. I mean, you know, when you have a whole house full of superpowered beings, why bother, you know?
Very true. So true.
You just, you know, all you have to do is put a little sign out front so this you know, facility is protected by X-Men. But by mutants. But one of the things, you know, Annie and I have talked a lot about the fact that neither of us really had any great interest in the character of Deadpool. Then that demo reel hits.
Oh, my God. Brilliant.
And all of a sudden, I'm thinking, this needs to be a movie because I will go and see it ravenously.
I thought
I need this movie. And I love the fact that they took that and incorporated it into the opening titles.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't just simply say, well, everybody's already seen this. Well, not everybody.
And then exit out, yeah.
Yeah, and then they made it not only part of the opening titles, but part of the whole opening gag to introduce Colossus into the mix, which at the time was a complete surprise to me.
My God, was that not amazing seeing him on that screen for the very first time?
I mean, yeah, nobody told us. And then I have to give just amazing props to Leslie Uggams. Dear God.
Oh, yeah. How did we miss that? How did we not talk about Blind Al? Good Lord.
Oh, she was amazing, right? She was one of the best parts of the movie in a comical way because, like...
Oh, just the thing in the laundromat. Club soda for blood, dumbass.
Right.
I mean, that just underscored the character for the rest of the... forever.
I'm glad they kept her in the second... Not to jump ahead, but, like, I'm glad that she's a part of the cinematic universe still to this day kind of thing.
And I was surprised to discover, just stumbling on stuff the other day, that she, too, was part of the existing
Marvel
universe.
Well, she wasn't cinematic then. She actually – wow, that's awesome.
She, in that initial run of Deadpool that I was talking about, like starting at Deadpool number one and going forward, she was absolutely a huge part of those books.
Nice. Love that.
And yeah, and I was so glad they brought her in and did her some justice. Even though in the comic books, she's a lot darker than what she is in the movies. Like, a lot darker. She's sort of his agent in the comics. Uh-huh. And he treats her like total shit in the comic books. Like, puts her in the box and does all kinds of stuff to her. You know, and they toned that down. But she was also a lot darker in the comics. I'm kind of glad they didn't, you know, because, again, they could have made this movie very dark. It could have been a black comedy.
Yeah, but it'd been as good.
No, it wouldn't have.
Being so cheesy makes it so lovable.
Cole, thank you for bringing that up.
Oh, I mean, I knew her, and I had to wait for the credits to figure out, I mean – to me, I love when you see actors and actresses that you haven't seen in something in decades.
Yes.
You know, for lack of a better purpose, repurposed, or better word, rather, repurposed, you know, to finding these wonderful new niches.
Yeah, for sure. Aaron, what was that?
I said it scratches that nostalgic itch when you see people that you haven't seen in forever, and you're like, oh, it just feels comfortable, like a nice blanket wrapping around you, you know? It's like, I love that stuff.
I know. It was absolutely brilliant, and what a wonderful role, and what a wonderful nod to an amazing actress, and also just, you know, props to her for taking on such a wonderfully ridiculous role.
And yeah, but okay, that's a good point, right? Because – up until we hit Logan, which Logan came out in between the first and second Deadpools, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. The X-Men movies up to this point, no matter what they were sort of like the Fantastic Four movies, where they were fun to watch, but I didn't get the sense that anybody was owning those characters.
Okay. Oh, God, yes.
And,
yeah.
And this movie... they owned their characters. Everybody from Gina Gerano to, the Ajax on down to, you know, Uggams playing Blind Al, she owned that character. No questions asked.
Ed Skrin.
We would be remiss if we move on, because we will have to talk about him in the next one. If we didn't talk about everybody's the real hero of Deadpool and Deadpool 2, in my opinion, the cab driver.
Oh yeah. What's his name is? I wrote it down somewhere. Dopender. Yeah.
Just brilliant. And coming into the next movie.
Oh, he gets better, right?
Perfect. Just perfect. All right, so I Cole, do you want to move into the next movie? Why don't you take us in?
I think so. Yeah, we need to, because you know, we're promised at the end of Deadpool brilliant of ways for those who didn't flee the theater the second the running lights came on. You know, we're promised not only a Deadpool 2, which at this point was a no-brainer, because as you sat watching the first one, every minute you watched, Deadpool made another $10,000.
Right.
It was just, you were just sitting there while money was pouring in. And the mention of Cable.
Cable.
And I was like, oh, great. Another character I don't give a rat's ass about. I mean, Cable is probably...
He's Cyclops!
Neck and neck with Deadpool in the I don't care department. They both head up the... they're like the night... They shift and night shift of that department. But at once I felt like... Yes, give me characters I don't give a rat's ass about, because you've already done that with an entire movie.
Cole, I have a question.
Right?
Did you watch the animated X-Men series back in the 90s?
The one with the worm? No.
Yeah.
Oh, never heard of it.
Yeah, that one. Did you watch that
never
one?
Never heard of it.
I love that.
I think it's across the board, right? That we all really.
That was a fun series. Closest that anything ever got to.
The books, right?
Yeah. Hitting upon them. But I guess.
Because they had Cable popped in on that series, and that was
stopped watching at some point for some reason.
Oh, okay. Because I thought they did a really good portrayal of Cable when he was fighting Apocalypse, I think it was. And he was one of the guys that helped them stop Apocalypse in the one series that they made, sequence of whatever episodes that they did.
Cable becomes the epitome of a period in comics where men were a yard wide and had gigantic.
Oh, I see what you're saying. The art style that took over.
Yeah, the pouches and padding and
lots of running water just everywhere.
Yeah, extremely large thigh muscles.
Yes, I know what you're saying. Yeah, you were saying
exorbitantly large weapons.
Yeah,
and in fact, I think it's they kind of played a nod to that, but
I wish y'all had a video feed of this, but Cable literally takes up a third of the cover page of the number one issue of X-Force. He's the only thing you could really see on the cover of this thing, other than Farrell and whoever this other chick is. Yeah, you're right. They literally got completely crazy with their art styles in the 90s.
And it was just a period where art began to push writing out. I remember actually seeing a headline, I think it was in Comics Buyer's Guide or some other comic rag of the day, where Rob Liefeld, of all people, espoused, what was it, writers, we don't want or need you.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
And you, of all people, want to say this, Mr. Hoofsy?
Right.
But I'm derailing a little bit, but I what I think, excited me about the fact that they're bringing Cable in. It's like, you've already proven the concept that you can take characters that Cole doesn't care about and make them want to go see movies with them. And then when Josh Brolin was announced, I'm like, oh, damn you. He was terrible as pre-surgical Dwight McCarthy.
Oh.
This was a poor fit in Sin City. But damn it, I knew he'd be perfect for this.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, God. All right, so let's go. Yeah,
shall we?
Plus,
not?
You get that Norman Rockwell promotional image.
Yes.
That basically told you outright, absolutely everybody is coming back.
Oh yeah.
And that's what we needed. We needed the assurance that nobody was a one-off.
Right.
So, Steven, going into Deadpool 2.
Yes.
Again, you still have probably no great knowledge of the comics, and that can't have hurt in the least.
No.
Were you as anxious to see it as comic fanboys?
Yes. After seeing the first one, and it just won me over. Because I may not be a comic book guy, but I am a movie guy.
And that's why we needed you on this episode.
And I do appreciate it. Like I said, I did not know the comic book character or anything like that. I just saw that, you know, Ryan Reynolds, Deadpool. And I was like, all right, I'll give it a try. And I fell in love with it. So when they told me, you know, second one's going to come out, I was like, oh, there's no doubt. I'm going to go see it, you know, first night, which I did. And I loved it as much as the first one.
I mean, I personally felt that it was as good or better. And it's rare, right? I get to say that about a sequel.
Amen.
There were a few reasons I thought it was better. And I was scared going into it.
Usually everyone is. The second one is always they did too much, or they failed. And then you're just like, at least we got the first one.
Yeah, you're right about that. They can always screw up the second one pretty bad sometimes.
Well, but the thing that I was worried about is, okay, they've established this character. They know that the movie's going to make money. They know, you know, so they're going to go whole hog on the goofy Deadpool, Hot Topic, comic book world where he's just going to waka waka, yucka yucka, you know, stare into the camera the whole time, be dumb and goofy the entire time, eating chimichangas, and you know what I mean? Like, that's what I expect. I was this is going to hurt my heart after the first one. And I went in, and I was very, very pleasantly surprised. Very pleasantly surprised.
Yes.
Well, when I heard that Ryan Reynolds, you know, had a big part in the first one, and then I heard that he had a big part in the second one, he, on the first one, the two writers that he had on there, he pretty much, I believe I heard that he actually paid out of pocket for two writers that he wanted on the movie, and he brought them back for the second one.
Yeah, I mean,
he
loves it. Cole, what about you, man?
Yeah.
I, for one thing, you know, like I said, I was very happy to see this character come back, this saga come back, to be able to explore the fun and the violence. You know, it was like Story of Ricky with jokes. And
did you just say the Story of Ricky?
Yes.
That's the greatest movie of all time. If you have not seen that movie, you need to stop what you're doing right now. Buy it, whatever you have to do, and watch that brilliant, magnificent Asian fucking. I'm sorry.
That's all right. It's after 10.
It is the Hong Kong cinema version of Monty Python's Sam Peckinpah's Salad Days.
It is so good.
Cole, how did we make it 272 issues of this show without talking about Story of Rick?
I don't know. That is one of my favorite movies of all time.
It's amazing.
So, you know, going in, I'd seen enough of, and I love the fact that in lieu of a lot of trailers, they just did fun sizzler reels. The whole Bob Ross thing was just nothing short of brilliant.
That was, absolutely.
You know, with the Betty White and the Purple Rain.
Yes, yes.
Oh, dear God.
What's her name that sang Titanic?
The Celine Dion music video was
Yes, that was genius marketing. Whoever came up with that needs like $1 million bonus because they it's amazing.
Well, and the whole thing, right? You get what you feel like is going to be the first serious trailer, and then he interrupts it. It does his own little, you know, action figure theater there, which again, actually reproducing a scene from the movie in a way. And I just love the line, you know, that isn't something you'd say. The regeneration powers activate. But it just sold, like that demo reel sold the first film before that was even something anybody was going to put money behind. The ad campaign sells the idea that this is going to be fun. I think like the day before I was going to go see it, I think my little brother's asking, well, you know, do you know who the big bad is in this? And I'm like, no, I don't know. And I don't know that I want to know yet. I hadn't heard anything. And then, of course, to see the juggernaut realized.
Oh, we're so good.
The way the juggernaut should be.
The juggernaut? Oh.
I do have one question, though. My takeaway from Deadpool 2 is shoving electrical cords up people's ass and throwing them in water. Really the way we do it in Russia?
I think it's good.
I mean, it seems like it might be.
It was a master move, but apparently, according to Pyotr Rasputin, that's how they do it in Mother Russia, which I guess he's glad he's living in the stateside now.
Right.
But also as the, you know, resident Big Red in the Marvel Universe, I love the fact, I don't know if anybody else caught this, the Xavier School rule book was formatted the same way as the Little Red Communist Manual.
No, I did not catch that at all.
It is exactly the same shape and size as the quote-unquote Little Red book.
Oh, really?
Yes, and I thought that was absolutely brilliant, because who better to be perusing every last detail than, you know, someone who grew up in Soviet Russia.
That's a good catch, Cole. I didn't catch that.
Because that could have been any size, and that was entirely the wrong size for a manual for students to learn all the rules and stuff.
So
especially him. He's a gigantic, he's gigantic metal man with a little tiny book.
It was a great visual effect. So what I really liked about Deadpool 2, Aaron, I hope that you're braced for this, what I'm about to say, okay?
Hit me with your best shot.
Is that they absolutely pulled an Iron Man 3 on us. And I thought that was brilliant, where they did such a great job of hiding the big turn, the one big turn of hiding it from us that, you know, you get in there, you're in the seat, you're watching it, and you're expecting this giant knockdown, drag out battle with X-Force versus Juggernaut and Fire Fist, you know, and possibly, for God's sakes, we got goddamn Black Tom Cassidy in this movie, which I never would have ever thought I would ever see, ever.
They introduced Shatterstar, like, from the comic book.
So good. So
and,
good.
And he looked exactly like he did in the comics.
And then what did they do? They killed everybody off within seconds. And I loved every portion.
That was a master stroke.
Oh, my God. It was so amazing. I can't tell you how I was like, wow, thank you for that.
How do you one-up your own master stroke? And that is to give you Shatterstar, have him specifically invoke Mojo World.
Mojo!
Yes.
Thank you for...
Have him look almost identical to what he looks like in the costume, which is a rarity for comic book movies.
Right.
Absolutely.
And then when his gruesome demise, the helicopter is splattered in baby blue blood. And I thought, damn it. You have
three.
If there's any questions for the unindoctrinated, if they're unfamiliar with the character, the line from Mojo World's like, yeah, sure you are. Ha ha, Mojo World. And then he splatters alien life force all over everything.
I was so heartbroken. I was like, man, why did you get a cool character like that? All of them, for that matter of fact. And then immediately take them away from me. Damn
so
you.
Perfect. It was so, and they brought in, and the thing is, like the guy that they got to play Vanisher, or not Vanisher, we all know who they got to play Vanisher.
Yes.
But the guy that they got to play Zeitgeist was like the guy that played It in the new It. The guy who played Pennywise in the new It.
Oh, Pennywise, yeah.
I mean, so they had these fairly big name guys in it, and then they just kill them all. And I'm like, God, so this is brilliant. Except for my favorite. I never liked or never cared. You know, I didn't like Deadpool. I don't like Cable, right? Okay. It's just too confusing. But I never gave a shit about Domino until now.
Oh, are you kidding? I know.
Amazing.
They took this character nobody cared about.
Nobody cared about.
And made her one of the top best.
Oh, yeah.
She was holy so crap. Wonderful. I want to see a Domino movie now.
Yes! Yes!
I want to hug her. She was awesome in that movie.
Well, do you just get the feeling after that first conversation they have during the interview, during the audition, that and this is something you never get, because I've read a lot of X-Force, I've read a lot of like new X-Force, I've read a lot of, you know, stuff that has Domino in it, and you never get the sense that you get from that character so brilliantly portrays it, which is, I never have had to worry about a thing in my life. Since this kicked in, I got nothing. Yeah. Everything works out. Everything's
she just
fine.
Saunters along. Like,
luck isn't a superpower. Oh, yes, it is.
No, okay. Like, would you get your pretend superpowers to work with?
I loved her in this movie. She was absolutely an amazing character, and I hope that they bring her back. I really
do. How, oh, they have to.
How her powers were realized. You know, first, the most obvious place, but it's so subtle at the same time, is she's the sole survivor, other than Deadpool himself, of their airdrop.
True that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. She's the only one who gets off scot-free, misses every terrible thing.
And actually land in the area where they're supposed to land, too.
Exactly.
As rumors go, there's supposedly going to break off with an X-Force sort of spinoff, so we might have a whole rewind on all those characters.
Well, that would be fun. Or just to, you know,
the underground saying, at least.
Bring us those characters and some other characters, because they were drawing the X-Force team from all over the place. Apparently, Zeitgeist was in one issue of X-Force.
Yeah, he was not in a whole lot. But the thing about Domino, the portrayal of Domino, right, is there's never a scene with her in it. And I thought this was brilliant. I really paid attention on my second viewing, where she conveys anything but nonchalance.
There's no fear in her.
Well, there's not even fear. There's no anything. It's just, it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
She knows. She's like, I'm the luckiest person alive, man. It's my superpower.
She is going to skate through everything in the world.
That whole scene where the car's flying above her head and she's sort of taking her goggles off or whatever it was and putting it in her hair and such, and she's sort of just coasting through that scene. I'm like, man, that sums it up right there.
Well, if you watch, even if you watch the first, the scene where they jump out of the airplane, right? Where they're parachuting in. Everybody's like, you know, Shatterstar's got a lot of excitement. You know, Peter, who we have to talk about, Peter is, you know, scared, obviously. Deadpool gives his speech. But the entire time, she just has this just kind of look on her face like, all right, I guess we're going to do this. Gets up, you know, kind of just steps off the helicopter, and then they will cut to them as they're falling. And her face just, there's nothing, you know, there's no excitement. There's no battle lust. There's no,
I think indifference just, is, she just has this casual indifference with the world, because nothing, She's never had to worry about anything.
She knows. Yeah, there's no worry in that because she knows she's going to be cool when it comes all out, man.
But
yeah.
The portrayal of that was perfect.
Yes, the actress and in the scenes that they put her in, everything underscored exactly what she is all about. And then, you know, to garner characters from all over the MCU, the Vanisher is an ancient, like, first 12 issues era X-Men villain.
Oh, Joe, okay.
And to, you know, retool the character, not only as a joke, and you're half wondering if there really even is a Vanisher. Until the parachute, which is
still the parachute, yes.
Another just master stroke. And then, you know, to the reveal when he's electrocuted.
Yes.
Right.
Holy crap. You know, bravo.
Mr. Brad Pitt.
But I love the idea of building this. You go through the whole exercise of building the team and the just delicious irony that they're going to be dead almost to a man.
Yeah.
In the first 10 minutes of their existence. And then, yes, we definitely have to talk about Sugar Bear.
Peter.
Can I get one more thing on Domino?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And this will close it out. Like, you know, I think we've said a lot, but no more is it exemplified, right, than in my favorite line in the entire movie, and she delivers it multiple times, which is, you're doing great.
Just, right?
Just, you're doing great. Like, who cares? You're doing great out there. It's so good. It's so perfect for her. Just, okay, you're doing great. Whatever happens here, I'm fine. So you get out there and you do, you know, you bring it on home now. You're doing great. Like, it's so good. All right, so go on to Sugar Bear there, Cole.
Oh, well, one thing I loved is the photo that is presumably everybody sent in their picture in advance.
The resume. Yeah, the resume.
Yeah, the resume photo. And he's like, am I being Catfisher? Am I wrong? Was that Josh Brolin?
No. That's a longtime character actor. And I pulled up his IMDb because I know, okay, I recognized him. But he had, I think for the role, put on a bunch of weight and, you know, grew the mustache. But that's definitely a headshot.
Oh, that was the same guy.
Yeah, that was the same guy.
Oh,
that was a headshot from him, like one of his acting headshots. Hey.
No way. That,
yeah.
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 Oh, that's awesome.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, so, I don't think he's done anything for a while.
That made it even
and
better.
So, yeah, I think he hasn't done anything in a while, so I think that was just you know, like,
one of his old headshots. That is even.
Yeah, and it's like, hey, you want to be in this movie? Yeah. You mean get a new headshot? No, I want your old one.
How did
I got a plan.
Well, I mean,
it was probably his audition. I guarantee you that was his audition headshot for the film. For Deadpool.
So, right?
He sat down. You know what? Now that I mentioned it, we're going to have to research this. I bet you he's gained weight since that headshot, but that was the headshot he brought to his audition. And he handed it to Ryan Reynolds, and Ryan Reynolds held it up and said, are you catfishing me? In the audition. I will put money on that.
Either that or is the most shrewd casting director ever, who's like, you know, I know just the guy.
Right.
He used to look like this, and now looks like this, and we're going to combine the two. But I want him back in Deadpool 3.
He has
to.
They
did that whole little thing at the end to bring him back.
Yeah. I want to see him and Rohinder have this sort of, like, rivalry.
Between him and the
team. Yeah. Oh, that was great. Do you have any superpowers? No. What the fuck?
That just sold it all. And then to be able to have the very straight face Josh Brolin Cable in the middle of some of the most ridiculous dialogues.
Right.
Just sells the comedy aspects even more. Like when he's getting the skee ball token.
Yes.
Yeah.
And his utility pouch. and Deadpool's bartender friend. He's like, damn, that is a fanny packet. You know it.
Yeah.
The fact that he's that adamant.
There were so many good jokes about.
He's like drawing a pistol on him. Oh, and real quick, because we are probably over time now. Steven, you had mentioned something about Fire Fist that I thought was really fascinating that you had just read like a day or two ago.
Yes. Okay. So the casting of Fire Fist or Russell was actually because of Green Lantern. And it's because the director from, Hunt for the Wilderness People, which Russell was in, I don't know his real name. It starts with a J, I think. But he was in Hunt for the Wilderness People, which was a good indie film. And the director, which is the director from Thor Ragnarok, Taiki. Yeah, he was in Green Lantern with Ryan Reynolds. And I guess probably when Ryan Reynolds was, hey, I'm about to do the second one, I guess they were maybe like talking. He's like, yeah, I'm trying to cast, a kid part. And then he just said, hey, I got a kid that you'll probably love. And brought on the kid that, that plays Russell. So I just found it was really weird that, something good came out of Green Lantern.
You son of a bitch. How dare you?
So Andy just sent everybody a picture of Rob Delaney.
And just sent you his IMDb page, and that is absolutely the same guy. Like,
wow.
Yeah.
That is hilarious.
Also, in the second one, we have the return of Negasonic Teenage Warhead and her girlfriend, Yukio.
Yeah.
Hi, Yukio.
Hi, Yukio.
Hey, wait. I love the interplay because she, Negasonic Teenage Warhead, is so belligerent around Deadpool. And you can see this sort of just level of disgust that her girlfriend is being flirtatious with this complete jerk. It's like, I know this guy. You're not. You really don't know what you're getting into here.
Yes.
Wade. Yes.
Wade's a jerk, trust me.
It was just great. Their chemistry, just no matter what's going on, it just seems like even if he's having a bad day and she says, hi, Wade, he goes, hi, Yukio. He always seems like he always will make it that high pitch. Hi.
Because he loves her. He loves seeing her as a friend.
Well, and I'm now wondering if she has comic book pedigree.
She does, but it's nothing like, but it's absolutely nothing like her appearance in in Deadpool at all.
I looked her up and could not be more different.
Right. Yeah. No. Like there's absolutely no basis in. She was created by Frank Miller and Chris Claremont. There is no basis for this character in what she has become.
The frightening thing is that apparently she has a dual cinematic history.
Yep. Yes, she does.
Because she appeared in which one of
the Wolverine second Wolverine movie.
What? Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's really? the Yo-Yo Gabari. She's like the chick
his
from,
bodyguard?
Was she one of those when they went to Japan, that yes. one?
Yeah.
Okay.
That she was the bodyguard?
She's the Gogo Yabari of Kill Bill to Wolverine's Yukio.
So she kept the the chain aspect of that role, I guess. Like,
yeah.
That's okay. Something. But I really like that character. It was a sweet character. It was.
She was.
That's something that was really interesting about this movie was that it was a sweet movie.
Yeah.
It was a family movie.
No, I wouldn't, yeah.
Family.
I have to point out, yeah, your family, yes.
You're right. Right.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you would not be a fan. I did.
But it was sweet. There were very sweet moments. Even down to Wade Wilson's death scene, which, granted, he did it Wade Wilson style, but I felt like, here's what I never got from the comics that I feel like I'm getting from these movies. And that's a sense of earnesty from the character. Which, coming as a comic book fan and just seeing the smartass, you know, that doesn't translate.
Okay.
So maybe that's a read on the comics that I didn't have, is that maybe there's a lot more earnesty and sincerity in the character, depending on who's writing it, than just snarky BS, you know?
Right, okay.
Also, tiny legs.
I haven't even talked about that yet.
Oh, the multiple jabs and FUs to one Robert Lee Field.
Who loved it, by the way. Who took...
Yes.
Yes.
And I think that's wonderful that, you know, as he's sort of aged out of his Lee jeans, enthusiastic, smart-ass, we don't need writers kind of...
mentality.
That heady mentality that he got when Image was all the rage. And people were still imagining that if they bought all 13 covers of Gen 13, that would finance their children's education. It's nice to see that he's got that kind of William Shatner or Adam West self-deprecation ability.
I have
self-deprecation powers activate.
Nice. Hey, I like that. I have a question. So, are we going to get a Mr. Sinister with the Essex Corporation in
Right? Good question. And I think the answer is yes. I think the answer is that the X-Force movie will focus probably on either A, Mr. Okay. Sinister, or B, Ms. Sinister. I don't think that they've decided which direction to go yet.
Mr. Sinister, just because I'm more familiar with Mr. Sinister's story arc.
I think, though, that if at this point we've established it's okay for the same actors to be in multiple superhero movies.
Yeah, you would think, right, at this point.
Yeah, you know, you've got Josh Brolin, Thanos, and Cable. You've got
how great was it when they made the Thanos joke at Josh Brolin, man?
I know.
That was like, thank you for doing that, because it's so obvious that we have an actor that's playing multiple parts here.
And then I wasn't like Chris Evans, one of the Johnny Human Torches.
Human Torch. Yeah. He was in The Loser.
So at this point, I think we can get away with, and I'm this is my casting call for this, for Mr. Sinister. I want to see Jeff Goldblum.
What? Oh.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
That's a tough one to grab, though, man. He's a high end roller that, like, he's in like his later stage in acting career. You gotta give him a lot of cash for that flow.
Yeah, they don't have the cash.
Yeah, at this point, they could buy and sell Thor Ragnarok's entire production budget.
That's true.
So I think they could afford Goldblum for more.
Good point.
I could see if you're going to give me another character I don't give a rat's ass about, you better drop in a quality. You got to do some quality casting.
So when does this movie take place?
As far as like timeline,
in the X-Men universe, when does this movie take place?
Because number two threw us off, because you remember they showed the X-Men group inside the classroom and they were all young.
I'm guessing early 90s.
I want to call this just given everything that you see. I'm really going to call this that it takes place in this sort of weird pocket that exists in all X-Men movies simultaneously.
Okay.
Because the weird thing with the X-Men movies is they ignore and simultaneously acknowledge with the reboot everything that came before.
Okay.
There are some subtle nods here and there to the first X-Men franchise.
Right.
And, you know, Wolverine becomes sort of the thread that runs through them all. So in a way, I think as the audience, we're like, what was it, the Exiles, who used to like jump from X-Men universe to X-Men universe. And I think that this literally, you could argue that it takes place in a kind of shared X-universe that's outside of the main continuity.
Sure, that makes sense.
And it would certainly have to take place presumably after. I've never seen Age of Apocalypse, just never got around to it.
You've never seen it?
It was pretty good, actually. It was
decent. Yeah, I need to bother at some point, but I just keep forgetting.
As long as you don't go in thinking that it needs to apply to every rule set previous. Just, like, enjoy it for what it is, and it's
well, not cool. You know, I've come through the era of bone claws at this point. I can – yeah, there it is.
This is a fight that Cole and I have had with ourselves going into all of these movies.
God. But the thing about it is, at this stage of the game, I'm prepared for anything. But I don't know. I bring this up partly to shame myself and partly to point out that I don't know if Colossus appeared prior to Deadpool on screen. I doubt that he did. Yeah. I mean, in the current franchise. Uh-huh. And so that, to me, places this sometime after Age of Apocalypse, because Colossus probably would have been damned handy.
He was so good in these movies. God, I'm so glad they finally did him right.
But also the fact that Kane Marco, a.k.a. the Juggernaut, refers to him as a commie.
Right? God, how awesome was it to see freaking the Juggernaut come out of that cage and rip Wade in half? Like, just to see how powerful he was, and finally, like, because beforehand we got, what was it, X-Men 3, we had a puny version of the Juggernaut being portrayed.
The British dude.
Yeah, and
I love Vinnie Jones, but they should have haggarded him up.
Like, even in Deadpool 2, where he was like, all right, here comes a CGI battle, get ready. I was like, let's do this, because I love Colossus, and I freaking think the Juggernaut is an awesome character. Freaking, let's make some giants happen. Let's do some things here. Oh, I was so happy with that.
I honestly never thought I would see the Juggernaut's ass. I don't know how I feel about that.
Any of us did, man. That was so, like, what did I just see? Why did I see that? And did I need to see that happen? I mean, that was so in your face, man. Oh, that was crazy. It's so.
You never do ass to you in your face.
Oh my God, that all. But you know the best part at the towards the end when you see him like coming out of the pool, like he's pulling himself out in the background. I'm like, thank you for not killing off the Juggernaut like that, because
don't Nicholson Joker him.
Yeah, such a great character. You could do so much with this dude.
And I saw a post somewhere. I don't remember where, like probably on Facebook or something. It's like, did the Juggernaut die at the end of Deadpool? Like, did you not watch the entire screen? Yeah,
you did not.
Right.
Speaking of watching the entire screen end, I believe it's time to move on to the post-credit sequence.
Oh, God.
Let's do it.
You know, we really haven't talked too much about Cable. I think that they did him – I think Cole's right. They did him a lot of justice. He's never been my favorite character, but he plays a great straight man to Deadpool.
He was the Margaret Dumont to Deadpool's Groucho Marx.
I loved him. I thought Josh Brolin, even though he's done so many other roles, he did an amazing job as portraying Cable as best as Cable can be portrayed in a movie.
Yeah,
and I have to give mad props to the Spinal Tap nod.
Turning up to 11, baby.
Yeah.
Well, I got to give mad props to – go ahead.
Dial goes all the way to 11.
That's right.
I got to give mad props to Alan Tudyk and Matt Damon for playing very convincing
rednecks. Their cameos?
Yes.
I do have to say, Matt Damon, he's been doing a lot of cameos. He was in Thor Ragnarok, just randomly just thrown in there, you know, to do the play. I mean, I really like that Matt Damon's just, you know, like, yeah, I have time on my hands.
Why wouldn't you? You know, that's the thing. Why wouldn't you? If you're Matt Damon, there. Why not?
I mean, at this point, Matt Damon should just try to get in every superhero movie ever made from now on.
Right?
Would that not be an amazing trademark?
Just done acting. You know,
like him and Stan Lee, boom.
Exactly. Oh.
Stan Lee being a stripper club DJ. We didn't even talk about that.
Oh, God.
Well, so was he not in the second one?
You know what?
Apparently he was, because I saw something that said something about the Blink and You'll Miss It cameo.
Yeah, he was in it. I'm just trying to remember what he was.
Can't remember off the top of my head.
I saw the movie three times, and I could not find him.
furiously looking for what Stanley's cameo was, all of us.
Now it's just a race to see who can look it up quickest.
It really is. But while we're racing,
the most informative.
While we're racing, what was the Stephen? How do you feel about as a movie fan? Because there was so much of it that was based in continuity. How did you feel about the after credit scene?
I loved it. I love that they brought Peter back, the girlfriend. I really enjoyed it. The X-Men, universe, from, X-Men 1 to now, the timeline is so messed up. So, yeah, him going back in time really quick to, boom, 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 make some changes, I was fine with it. And I just like that Teenage Warhead, she was just freaked out after, right when they handed it off to him. They're like, oh, crap, what do we do?
Sudden realization of, wait a minute, I know this guy. I should never, ever encourage him.
Exactly.
Why did I fix this for him? And how is she that smart to fix something? And how does she get it?
She's a super genius.
Well, I mean, how does she get it off of, the cable just say, well, this is useless. Throw it away. And she's like,
pockets.
Well, the thing about it is, in his time frame, in his timeline, if you have one of those, you get like X number of shots, and it's like those old disposable cameras.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
Once you're done with it, it's like, why bother keeping it?
Every kid that's listening to this is going, what's a disposable camera?
Why would you throw a camera away? What's a camera?
Well, yeah, it's like
it's on your phone, right?
Yeah. So what's he do? He goes back. First thing he does is saves his girlfriend, which is contentious, and we're not going to get into what they're referring to as the fridging of that character. I don't even want to touch it right now. I'm sure that at some point in the next 6 months we will, because we discussed that very early on in Hey Kids Comics history. But he went back and corrected that. He also corrected the Green Lantern oversight in about the most violent way humanly possible.
Oh, yeah.
That was so good. And again, self-deprecation powers activate.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So and the good. Fact that the only member of X-Force that needed he saving saved. That he bothered to save
was Peter, was Sugar Bear. Yeah.
That, hold on.
Yeah.
We know.
It just added to the big middle finger to Rob Liefeld that is so much of, there's no way in hell we're bringing Shatterstar back.
No.
Go home, Sugar Bear.
No, we can still bring Shatterstar back. We just didn't see it on film. And we all...
Yeah, Remon fanboy.
That's right.
We all know when it comes to this stuff, nobody's totally really, really dead unless you see their ashes.
I'm going to tell you right now, his new name is Splatterstar.
Nice. Well done. Good joke. But what they did... But Aaron, what they did by establishing Mojo World and killing off the lesser character is now we can have Longshot.
Yeah, that is so true.
Oh, wow, yes.
Set up, right?
Now they can set that up. So,
I think we've opened the door to Mojo.
God, wouldn't that be great?
Dude.
Wouldn't that be great?
Who is this generation's Orson Welles? Because that's who needs to...
Wait, there is voice. No... There is...
Danny DeVito.
No, not...
Oh, God. Danny DeVito would be the perfect actor to portray him and... We just Andy Serkis him, just have him there on the set going, I'm Mojo, damn it, let's get some things going here.
Where's my ratings?
He ain't got many more years to go. That dude, I love him to death, but...
He's in the new Dumbo movie.
DeVito?
Yeah, he actually
Okay.
The thing is, I saw something that Tim Burton was doing, the live-action Dumbo, and I thought, I bet Danny DeVito is going to be in that. And I wonder if what's her name?
Helena Bonham Carter.
Yes.
I didn't see her in the trailer.
Doesn't matter.
She's most likely going to be in it.
Doesn't matter. She's in it.
Yeah. So, apparently the crows are in it, but they get stepped on right at the beginning, so they don't have to worry about that contentious bit of Disney history.
I guess that's right. They get rid of them fast.
That's right.
I love the fact. That, go ahead, Cole. I'm sorry.
What's look, Mommy Crows. Where?
Yeah, not anymore. I love the brilliant editing that they did from, and I don't know how long it took to splice it together for the editing for when he kills the Deadpool from X-Men World Wolverine Origins.
Oh, that was a good adder, right? That was.
That was. I mean, that's like Forrest Gump and Deadman Don't Wear Plaid and God knows what old the one.
They took old footage and they blended it in beautifully.
Yeah, they did.
For me, it wasn't the shooting of Deadpool that made it for me. It was the fact that they somehow managed to cut Logan, so he looked super confused about what was going on.
Yeah.
Just the right combination of bits of footage
to splice that shit together so that he looked just like, what the hell?
And speaking of Logan, the music box.
Oh, yeah.
Marvel Select. It was a Marvel Select.
That was awesome in so many ways.
And I did love that they bring up the, you know, and Logan, when he's having his dying moment, that song that's playing in the background, that they use the same exact song when Deadpool's dying.
Oh, so good.
It was really good. Like,
yeah.
It's layered is the thing. I think the reason these two movies work is that they are layered. And they fly in the face of traditional studio conviction that we can't do comic book movies that are too much like a comic book because that's only a portion of our audience.
Whatever.
Without realizing that the portion of your audience that gets some of the gags are just as that don't get the gags are just as satisfied as those that do.
Right. I agree.
Right. Yeah, I think that there was the right blend. And I do want to, as we get ready to wrap this up, I do want to give mention to the fact that that indeed we mentioned him earlier, but just how important it was and how quickly they derailed the idea that Black Tom Cassidy, a major X-Men villain, was in this with very little fanfare. Just not very much at all. Uh-huh. And also, who was released? They never got those guys back, by the way.
Went off, right?
Yeah, the prison transport just opened up and everybody ran for it. Like, who's out there now?
And that, I hope we get to see some of that aftermath.
Well, maybe that will add to the sequel where they'll have bad guys roaming around because all what...
Yeah, now he's got to go out and clean it all up.
Exactly, right? There, you got a story right there.
Yeah, there's your X-Force.
How great. So, you know, these movies have never been anything brilliant with the soundtracking. And it's a lost art. We don't see a lot of good movie soundtracks. Like, I was listening to the Blade 2 soundtrack today.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I mean, but the way that they use it in the movie is brilliant. Like, the Blade 2 soundtrack is brilliant in the movie.
Yeah.
I feel like it's become a lost art as we've moved away from trying to sell CDs into digital. I feel like we've kind of gone away from the idea that a soundtrack is important to the film in terms of storytelling.
Yes.
How perfect was 9 to 5?
Oh my God, I can't tell you what that means to me because, like, when I was a little kid, my dad stole cable and I watched a lot of movies back in the days. And 9 to 5 was one of those movies that they kept putting on replay on, like, HBO, Cinemax, and Showtime, right? Over and over and over again. So I watched it several times. So it was, like, one of my favorite movies back in the day. So when I heard Dolly Parton's voice singing, "Working 9 to 5. Either we didn't make money." Yeah, I was like, holy cow. You couldn't ask for a more nostalgic, like, sort of, that. Well,
and if that wasn't enough, Yentl, for God's sake.
Oh, the realization that if you want to build a snowman is the same song. Oh my God, my mind was blown. My mind was blown through his pain and suffering. That's what he's holding on to. I was crying. It's true.
I never put those two together until that part. I'm like,
Cole has a term for that.
Oh my God, he's right.
Yet again, we've been Martha'd.
Cole has a term for that now. It's called being Martha'd.
It's being Martha'd.
Superman versus Martha'd, I'm assuming.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
But, Cole, would you care to explain what being Martha'd means?
Well, most recently, on the very last issue of this very show, we were talking about none other than J. Jonah Jameson of Spider-Man fame.
Okay.
And Andy had stumbled upon in his research an article that pointed out one of those great obvious things that nobody seems to have noticed for decades.
Okay.
And much like having a largely forgettable film point out the incredibly obvious that Superman and Batman have a mother figure in their life that share the same name.
Right.
And never put that together.
Right.
The realization that in this case, J. Jonah Jameson was actually analogous to Frederick Wortham and the Seduction of the Innocent.
Yeah, the people that were going after comic books saying that they were evil and
exactly. Like, his crusade against Spider-Man is merely a mirror image because J. Jonah Jameson enters comics about the same time the Comics Code Authority is established to protect them.
Makes so much sense when you break it down and
I know, and we're like, holy crap, we've been Martha'd.
I've been there the entire time.
The whole time.
And so this is yet again for fans of Yentl and or Frozen.
You can call it a Martha moment.
You've been Martha'd.
Y'all been Martha'd. All right. Well, I think it's time we wrap this up. We did not cover everything, of course.
No,
we probably will over the next 8 years or however long we plot this out until I Howard Hughes myself to death in this office.
Well, the fact that we have done so damned many episodes, over 250, we're barreling up on 275, plus the specials and the annuals and the just recently launched Hey Kids Comics Quarterly. Holy crap.
Good for y'all. That's all I got to say.
I can't believe it. It does not seem like that long ago. And I'll go back and look at the archive and the back issue bins on the Jedi Cole universe. And it's just like, good God. I don't think we ever imagined that we could keep this going. And I've got 2 years worth of material or of titles and topics already lined up.
Yeah, I never imagined picking up the phone to call Cole and ask if he wanted to do a comic book podcast that we'd still be doing it. God, what is it? How long has it been? 5 years? 6 years?
Five or 6 years, because Ranker Pit's younger than this show, and Ranker's 5 years old.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's been a wild... It's been a wild ride, including... I don't know, three states, five moves, it's been a wild ride, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. Cole is a great host and a great friend, and and I get to have awesome guests. We get to have awesome guests on this show.
It keeps my brain ticking even more, and I love a clever turn of phrase. The other day, I'll go ahead and reveal, because it may be sometime in 2019 before you hear this, but we have a topic that just hit me the other day where we're going to talk about henchmen in comics. Those that ally themselves or come in league with the major villains. It's called Lend Me a Center.
Lend Me a Center.
I like that.
My favorite one, I think, so we've done 272, and I've seen the title for every episode, I think. Every issue of Hankins Comics going forward. And Cole, what's my favorite title?
Oh God, which one?
The one you just told me about Archers.
Oh God, yes. In fact, it's about two issues from now. is we're going to be talking about all of like Green Lantern and Hawkeye and other Archer characters in comics, and it's Knocked Up.
Knocked Up, and I just lost it. I was like, that's amazing.
When I told Andy, there was this pause where his mind was getting around the spelling and the connotation. And I say Knocked Up, and then I told him what it was about. And he's like, oh, dear God, that changes everything.
People of puns.
I love writing this show and writing all the copy for the for Podbean and for the Jedi Cult Universe. And
it's a great show. It's just
a treat to come up, you know, find new ways to express, like, the title of this show, Riddles Rap, just hit me one day. I'm like, well, crap, we need to be talking about this. We never talked about Deadpool before.
That's right. And speaking of shows, Aaron, you have a show, don't you?
I do have a show, actually. It's called the Wonder Twin Powers Activate Show. That's all one word. Yeah, there's a long story behind that. But you can find us on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Just do WTPA Show or Wonder Twin Powers Activate Show, and you can find me and Danae. We talk about very similar subjects, and we just have a, you know, it's two best friends having a good time together, basically trying to make each other laugh.
Hell yeah!
And if you missed it, they were on the premiere issue of Hey Kids Comics Quarterly, which launched.
Love how y'all name these things. It feels very comic booky. I love that shit.
We set out from the beginning to do that. We never called them episodes. We called them issues.
That was Andy's master stroke on this, and I just run with it.
Thinking. I applaud the magistry of that.
And I can consider our little embed link things, the image. The thumbnail for each one is like I consider the cover for each issue.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we have a good synergy. I love it.
The archive is the back issue bins. We now have six boxes of back issues.
I was like, dude, that is genius. I want to hug you for that.
speaking of a synergy, Steven.
Yeah.
What about you, man? What are you doing now? Where can people find you? I understand that you might be interning somewhere, not in Ryan Reynolds'
house. I intern with the Rancor Pit when I can.
In fact, I'm going to take this moment to invite you to be on Sunday's show, Kesselmania, where we talk about Solo.
Oh, my God.
Ooh, that's going to be... Ooh.
If you're available.
Well, it's Father's Day, so that's the only negative.
Well, that's right. I keep forgetting. Everybody keeps turning me down. I had to go begging for a guest for Isle of Toys.
You know who else? You know who else doesn't celebrate Father's Day anymore? Han Solo.
Who?
Go see Solo if you haven't seen Solo. And if you're still mad about freaking The Last Jedi, don't be mad. Go watch it. It's a great movie. It was
take your dad to go see Solo on Father's
Day. Oh, we already did go see Solo.
Steven's taking this very seriously
again on Father's Day while you're dissing my show.
It's a maybe. I'll say that. But also, me and Miss Jedi Cole.
Uh-oh. Is this official? Whoa. This is a big announcement. Is this official?
This is official. We're just trying to work out the timing.
What?
Exactly. Yes. Me and Catherine will be doing a show about me and her just gossiping and talking about movies, the new movies that come out, and probably movies from our past, which ones are our favorite, which ones we hated. I mean, a little bit of everything. Me and Catherine do need to sit down and discuss it, but I will be trying to get a hold of her soon.
Yes, Steven is actually the official new co-host for the return of What'd You Think to the Jedi Cult Universe.
That's a bury in the lead. We should have been talking about that now.
Yeah, because we were we've pretty much lost Bobby Blakey to Hollywood matrimony, but Catherine's been really keen to bring that. That was her baby. She created What'd You Think several years ago. It was a whole lot of fun to produce that. And absent Bobby, who is, of course, going to see every movie ever made, the only other person I can think of who also has a podcasting pedigree and is going to see every damn movie out there is Steven. So it's going to be rare we ever have to say, hey, have you seen this yet? And they're like, no.
Which was awesome. Funny because I was thrown into a whole segment with Cole, what's her name? It just skipped my mind. It was like right when you guys were in Deep Ellum, and I helped her out with her show.
Oh, Jedi Goddess, Christy.
Yes. She had a show, and she was talking about these movies, you know, and everyone in the – I was just there to watch, and no one in the theater, no one in the studio seen these four movies that they brought up, and I'm just over there in the corner just raising my hand like, I seen that. I saw that one. And then they're like, hey, we're going to throw him on the mic. I'm like, what? No. And then they're like, yeah.
That's how it always starts, man.
That's right. And, of course, five studios later and several name changes later, several banners later of the Rancor Pit Live and my new show Isle of Toys are over at DallasOnAir.com on the third Sunday of every month. You can catch Isle of Toys 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Central, and followed immediately by from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. the Rancor Pit Live, which I have lost track of how many episodes of that show we've done. It's about 4 years old now. I can't believe we've been doing it. The live streaming version of the Rancor Pit twice a month for this long, and that's the first and third Sundays of every month.
That's fantastic, man. That's fantastic. Yeah, and also you can find us out, you can find this show and the various other Jedi Cole Universe shows on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter. This show, HK Comics Show, will get you into all of them if you just search the various sites. Yeah, so interact. We want to hear from you. So let us know what's going on. Hit us up. Cole, do you have anything to add? Any final thoughts as we kick this out?
Keep checking out the back issue bins. I've been keeping that up to date. The Rancor Pit now has a new archive, which is titled, I think it's Not So Long Ago.
Nice.
And I'm endeavoring to get all 70 episodes so far up on the archive. I've got 35 of them published as of this moment. And then I'm going to go back and meticulously add flavor art to every single one of the link toggles because I wasn't thinking along those lines back then.
Masochist. All right. Well, we're gonna leave you all now. We're going to tell you to do what Deadpool told Peter to do, to just walk away. Just walk away.
Go home.
Thank you to Aaron and thank you to Steven for being here. This was incredibly fun. You guys are amazing. And join us next week for Hank Hits Comics. In the meantime, buy, collect, enjoy your comics. Say goodnight, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.